Jim Iannelli, who many of you know quite well, works for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center on analysis used for management of groundfish species in the North Pacific, and is a senior editor for the journal Natural Resource Modeling. Jim's going to talk to us today about studies to understand Chinook salmon distribution in the pollock fishery, evaluating impacts, and developing measures to reduce bycatch. Jim.
Thanks for that, Eric. After listening to those talks, I think my job's very easy. So if I can get the screen to go. So I'm going to talk about the work that we've been doing for a number of years now and digging through our files to specifically renew our Chinook salmon work that we did years ago for combining genetics and observer data, including age structure, from what I'm going to propose is a very wealthy database that should be taken more advantage of for the region. So I'm going to talk about the groundfish moving into out to the ocean here. It's a fairly large fishery. It's the main, the largest fishery in the U.S. By volume. These are our management areas. I'm going to principally be talking about the Bering Sea bycatch, because that's where it's been the highest. A brief comment on the and a slide on the Gulf of Alaska side and the actions that have been done there. So these are federal management areas outside three miles. And basically describing the fishery for pollock, there's four sectors and two main seasons. And the A season is the winter, with some catch distribution shown there on the left, and some B season fishing going on the right. And just to give you a feel for the extent of our observer coverage, which I'd like to make sure everyone's aware of, that what this is stepping through, I think it's 5-day increments, accumulating the catch and where it occurred over the last 4 years. From 2009 to this last summer. And just to give you, the main point is there's different patterns in where the pollock are caught each year. This is not salmon. This is where the pollock fishery is occurring just for the summer. And it's very highly monitored and covered. And since 2011, every vessel carries an observer. Before that, I think nearly 70 or 80% of all vessels trips had observers on board since the early 90s. In terms of where we're at and some of the issues that many are well aware of, this is showing chum on the left in thousands that occurred in the bycatch in the solid line. The dashed line shows the Chinook catch with the scale on the right also in thousands. 2007, we had the peak bycatch. And also 2006 was quite high from a historical perspective, and it came right down by 2008. I'll talk more on that in a second. Just for a feel for some of those years of high bycatch, and this is showing a similar figure to the other one, with the pollock will be on the left-hand side, where the pollock were caught, say, in the summer season. Chum salmon and Chinook salmon in the middle and the right, respectively. And you can see the high bycatch year for 2005, where the chum were taken, and for 2007, which was the high Chinook year, many right down by Unimak Island in the summertime and off Pribilofs. But importantly, there was more Chinook taken in the A season in the winter, whereas chum is principally in the summertime. So just to give you some background on where the fishery occurs and where it catches different species, incidentally, I'm going to now focus a few slides on just Chinook and some bycatch impacts analysis that we've been working on over the years. And this is where we basically combine genetics data that were done by ADF&G scientists with the observer data that were on the age composition for the Chinook bycatch. So the main challenge is coming up with a way to convert the bycatch so that you can actually evaluate the impacts. And this is something that's been around for a while. I think Doug Eggers has IMPFC document from years ago that basically corrected for bycatch of juveniles and adults in different fisheries so that you could evaluate what the impact of that fishery has on the future. And so I'm going to have a few slides on that. And for Chinook, we have ACES, and this is the basically the strata that we use to evaluate where and when the bycatch occurred. And a couple of points on this figure. The ACES and bycatch levels, again, here's that 122,000 total, but a lot of it occurred during the winter time and in the summer, and this is the southeast, basically east of the Pribilof Islands, 170 degrees west, and west of the Pribilof. So you can see in some years there's very little taken in the B season to the west, to the northwest region. Other years there's a larger proportion. And, for example, in this recent 2011, a bit of a peak there, a lot came from the B season and not very much from the A season. So there's a lot of variability in where and when the bycatch has occurred, and it's important to take that into account, especially when you're assigning genetic data to these types of information. What the observer data shows is we can have measurements of Chinook salmon by season. This is the A season from the early part of the time series, showing the length frequencies and estimates of the uncertainty and the absolute numbers at length of Chinook that were taken. Sorry for the small scale, but just for reference, that's about 55 centimeters at the peak there, and the upper limit on the scale is about 90 centimeters there. So a bit of variability between years, and sometimes you see the mode at 50 centimeters. Other years, it'll be up around 65, 70 in there. That's for and it's different in the B season. Here's a case where there wasn't much in the B season in that year. And just as another example, a more recent period, you could see two modes. Again, the absolute scale, 2006 and 7 were both high. Bycatch in general, and these scales are absolute, not proportions, but you could see that the pattern was quite different between seasons. The scale does change between these figures, but they're the modes and what's available or what's taken in the fishery. So the point here is we have accurate estimates of the size composition of the bycatch, and that's important because we can convert those lengths with age data into good estimates of what the proportion at age in the bycatch was. And that's what we need to figure out, what the impact of those catches were on downstream runs. So if they're taken at age 3 and they don't expect to return till age 5, then, well, it's not going to impact the run until 2 years later. And so that's the analysis that was undertaken. And this is the main graph that shows those results, and it's just the top line is the official total bycatch estimate. So that's the annual level that you see published online by NIMS. And what the lower line and confidence bounds show is the adult equivalent impact. And so there's a lag effect. In this case, you could see this is back in 2007, that the bycatch in 2007 already had an impact on 2008 runs, is one way to look at that figure. In terms of how these can be mapped into impacts on run strengths, here's all coastal West Alaskan stocks, mainly Kuskokwim, Yukon, and Nushagak. I think those are the main components, and I'm unsure if this is including Bristol Bay. I'd have to go back and look. But these are the impacts by run strength. So if the point of this is to say that if there had not been any pollock bycatch that year, there would have been something like 45,000 more Chinook salmon estimated to return in 2007. That's one way of looking at this information. Another way is to look at the impact rate. So we can take the run strengths against that data, and these were estimates that were provided by the state back then, and you can see that it's on the order in 2006 about 4%. So that says that there would have been 4% more Chinook salmon available had there been no pollock fishing or no pollock bycatch. Just to move back to this figure again, it's the same thing. We want to apply it so that we can look at what the trend has been since 2007. We ended this analysis with data that ended in 2007, but it was a long, complicated analysis, and we wanted to see if there are any way that we can use what we learned from the first study to project what's happening nowadays. And so what we did was come up with a little model that we nested and tried a bunch of different lags. These are just a linear model looking at the bycatch from the previous year at a certain and in previous years, 2 years. This is total bycatch. This is the A season bycatch, the B season in the southeast, the B season in the northwest, and so on. Looked at several terms that way and used AIC model selection criteria to come up with this figure here for the total impact. So the dots here are now what you saw in the AEQ impacts, and there's that 45,000 roughly number for 2007. But given all the updated information in the color figure, we can now go and, based on fitting historical estimated impacts, predict, well, how much impact has the pollock fishery had since then? And you could see that through to 2012, 2011, even though there was a bit of an uptick from 2011 bycatch in terms of AEQ, it's on the order of 10,000 fish that would have returned to the coastal western Alaska rivers based on these estimates. You can also use the same type of approach, a little more uncertain as you might expect, for different segments, since we did break out into upper and middle Yukon stocks, and these are the adult equivalent numbers that were estimated to have been taken for the upper Yukon on the order of 100 fish, 100 to 200 fish for that, and another 200 or so for the middle Yukon, based on the historical estimates. So I just want to spend a couple of slides looking at factors that we think affect the bycatch. How much do the way the fishing is behaving affect things? Does it matter in terms of just from a biological standpoint, the day or night, and are there gear modifications that can be used to minimize the potential bycatch increase? And I just want to say that gear modifications have been going on for almost 10 years now to try to figure out how to develop escapement panels so that keep the pollock but let the salmon swim out. And they've become improved a lot over the early versions of the gears that have been things. The other thing I want to look at is environmental conditions based on an NPRB study that I was involved with a few years ago where we looked at the temperature relationship and bycatch trends. Just looking at tow duration, this is a figure that's normalized to have a mean of 1, and the tow duration in the recent years when you saw it back in 06 and 07, an increase. The tow duration on average was longer, but it didn't really explain the increase in Chinook bycatch, as you can see there. So something else must be going on. This is just looking at patterns of diurnal effects, and you can see early morning, the Chinook per ton of pollock or the Chinook per hour of towing tends to be lowest in kind of pre-dawn early morning hours and highest during the daylight hours. And this is a bit of a complicated figure, but I'll walk you through it quickly. This is that NPRB study where we actually placed temperature recorders on the nets of the fishing boats, so that they could monitor what temperature waters they were going through. And then through that, we were able to establish a relationship that Chinook bycatch tended to be higher in generally warmer conditions and somewhat lower during colder conditions. Also, this just reflects common knowledge that during the summer, this is just based on summer analysis, not winter. The bycatch increases later in the season, the B season. This is a geographic map. Unimak Island is here, and it just shows the regional aspect of this model that was used to condition for taking into account the location, time of year, and temperature. And then the most important one here, kind of take home, is that this is the year effect. And that was quite significant. So that means, in addition to these other things, where the bycatch occurs, what temperature it is, when you're fishing, there's also year effects, as we all know. And the year effects might be due to the actual run size, and that's what this is showing, is the adult equivalent by year impacts relative to Western Alaska run sizes. There seems to be some relationship, but certainly the 2006 jump up there is something that, as the council and the industry is very interested in avoiding, so increasing the any potential thing. And with that, I just want to go over some of the management actions that the council has undertaken. The principal one is Amendment 91. That's the 91st Amendment to Fishery Management Plan, which is, I think, a record for any of the fishery management plans around the country. Most are on in the teens, for example, in New England. Anyway, it just shows that we're very active in trying to have minimize deleterious effects. The council went through a long public process to come up with a cap on the overall Chinook level. You'll recall that it went to 122. The cap is now 60,000, which if that hits, it will close the fishery to the sectors that are exceeding. There's also a performance limit so that even if you don't, 60 isn't the only number they have to worry about. They're really worried about this number because if they exceed this number more than three times in 7 years, that's going to be the new cap. That'll make that the new limit. So there's vessel incentives built in. As I mentioned, there's 100% observer coverage on all the vessels now. One of the other effects is there's a complete census now on salmon, so the protocols have become much stricter, even though they were, I think, adequate before. Now, instead of just sampling, they're actually counting every single salmon that gets taken as bycatch, and there's increased genetic sampling for both the Gulf and the Bering Sea. The other action that the council has taken is the Chinook bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska. This is showing they've now got a 25,000 cap because back in 2010 they got nearly 50,000 total for all groundfish fisheries. Here the brown is the pollock trawl in the Gulf of Alaska, and the yellow is just the other trawl gears that are going on in the Gulf of Alaska. And that was put in place this year. And now just to wrap up, I just want to point on the bycatch management. You know, the council's also considering chum salmon. There's caps and area closures being looked at and modifications to a rolling hotspot program that's industry-based where they look at the rates of bycatch that are occurring by region, and then they themselves will close a region to fishing so that as a fleet they minimize the amount of bycatch they take. And that's the other reason why it was relatively easy to get 100% observer coverage, because every fishing boat wanted to make sure that nobody else was doing something that wasn't being covered, at least by observers. One thing, there's complications. Timing differences and when Chinook and chum bycatch occur, and it's clear that the council prioritizes Chinook over chum. And just an example on the chum, I mentioned the amount of data that's being collected. This is just the sample sizes of length frequency data for summertime chum that's being taken. It's quite a bit, quite extensive, and you can get a really good feel for patterns. You can even see seasonally, if you collapse all that information down, you can see that in June, generally speaking, there's larger chum salmon in the bycatch than subsequent, and you can even see modes progressing as the chum salmon grow. So this just gives you a feel for some of the data that's there and available for analysis. One thing I thought was pretty unique in the analysis we did was to actually correct for the adult equivalent in the genetics at the same time, because in this case, if you say you had 100 fish last year were expected to return this year based on their age composition, well, it's not this year's genetics that would apply. It has to be last year's. So you have to account for that. And in this analysis for the chum salmon, we did that, and it did make have an impact on. These are just the different breakouts percentage-wise over time of chum salmon to coastal West Alaska, Japanese hatcheries, and elsewhere. But it does have an effect that you need to calibrate. Just on the chum, the other point of the analytical analysis is that if you just look at coastal West Alaska, the total run from 2004 to 2011 compared to the total bycatch that's attributed to coastal Western Alaska, it's a very small proportion, partly because most of the bycatch for chum is taken from Asian hatcheries, but partly because the way the genetics work out and, again, where and when the fishery occurs. And this is a figure just showing, illustrating that pattern of here's the pollock average cumulative catch each season till it finishes in the summertime. And the chum generally pick up around, bycatch picks up around August. But here the average summer condition shows that Chinook really start ramping up later in the year and into October. And this is something the council has taken active measures to try to avoid. And I know for a fact that the industry also is managing the way they fish so that they minimize so they avoid this problem of getting a lot of Chinook later in the year. Just another figure on chum measures. So here are some proposed chum measures that were presented last March. And I won't go into the details, but these are different levels of chum cap or trigger closure impacts. And the setup here turns out the chum measures actually ended up saving Chinook. So you close the chum fishery, and then you also end up saving Chinook. Well, that was because these ones basically made them stop fishing early in the year, and I'm over time. And these other ones actually increased the Chinook, and so the council's very interested in avoiding policies in the future that will increase the bycatch of Chinooks. And just in terms of questions, I just mentioned that observers' data. There's a lot of information there. I think there could be a lot more done with diet and overlap studies. In recent past couple of years, there's been a shift in priorities with far more genetic samples being collected, and that's resulted in the loss of length frequencies and kind of the standard observer collections that may also be of interest. And also, there's other analyses that need to be done, including validating this simple model I used to update the adult equivalent analysis, and also to include the new genetic information that's been collected. And with that, I'll stop. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Jim from the panel before we take a break?
Great. Thank you. Just one question about the observer coverage. When you say 100%, is that by vessel or by tow?
That's a very good question. Some tows do not get sampled. So we had a phrase that, well, we had 200% observer on the catcher processor fleet. Well, that's just we had two observers. So on those boats, 100% of the tows get observed. But on the catcher boats, the shore-based catcher boats, the observers do have to sleep. So they're sometimes they will miss a tow. But it's important to note that if they offload in the port, all of those get counted. The actual numbers of salmon get counted. They just don't get allocated to a tow location, if that makes sense. So there's an observer in the plant that is screening every fish that goes by on the conveyor belt. And they have very strict protocols for transfers of fish and even within a vessel at dock, if it has to transfer fish from one tank to another, there has to be an observer watching.
Dan.
I have one question, I think, well, a comment sort of, but I think you'll hear from the public. One of the questions out there has been what's happening on the Russian side with their fishery, and I don't think we get much data from there, and I think that would, you know, put it in as being a gap. What is happening over there? And whether there's some method of getting that information in the future.
We have two annual meetings with Russians, one's bilateral and one's over the Central Bering Sea. for the pollock fishery, and since they've got an interest in doing marine stewardship certification on their pollock, it's always come up that the lack of observer coverage. So it's always been a big question, open question. I don't have an answer on if the data could ever be made available or if it is available at all.
Just a quick question. When did you say the 100% observer status and the census sampling began?
That was for Amendment 91. It was 2011. And before that, we had 30% coverage of shore-based vessels, but in reality, it actually worked out more like 50%, just the way they operated things. It was 30% of their fishing days per quarter has to be covered in the Bering Sea, but it's actually, if you actually look at the data, something like 50% of their trips were covered.
With respect to the pattern of chum salmon bycatch being highest in the summer months and Chinook highest in the fall, is that a really consistent pattern? And how much variability is there around that pattern? Or is it really fairly tight and you see it year after year after year?
For chum salmon, definitely I don't know of any years where we've seen any measurable, I mean, a couple in the winter, but hardly any in the winter for chum salmon. In terms of, there's variability around when the peak is, whether it's, you know, the beginning of August, the middle of August, that type of thing for chum salmon. As far as Chinook salmon goes, in terms of the bycatch pattern, and it's confounded with where the pollock are, where the fleet is, and things like that, where the ice is. Some years, the majority of the bycatch occurs in the winter, and other years it can be in the summer. Generally speaking, it's most of the Chinook bycatch occurs in the winter.
Doug, one more. Yeah, great. Thank you. When you talk about the Bering Sea Chinook catch, you're allocating to what you call coastal Western Alaska systems. How would you characterize the overall Bering Sea catch? Is virtually, say, that 122,000 year, is virtually all of that going or being allocated in your analysis to Western Alaska, or is some measurable fraction being allocated outside of that, whatever that grouping is?
I have to look up. It's in. I can find the exact value that we estimated, but certainly not all of the 122,000 is attributed to coastal Western Alaska. There was, I can't remember the relative percentages, but I think it's over 50%. But I know people in the audience have it on the tip of their tongue, but definitely not 100% of the bycatches from coastal West Alaska.